Hello, everyone. This is episode 13 of Unbound. When Uncle Jim comes back, him and Samuel start talking to Brooklyn. I watch them nod and point to the woods and wonder what they're saying. "Papa," Willie whispers, squirming out of my lap and running to Uncle Jim. I follow close behind.
"I'm going to help your papa build your cabin," Brooklyn says.
"He's not," I start to say, but stop myself. Uncle Jim smiles.
"There's already 6 families living here," he says. "Best to spread out. There's a small clearing across the stream. Samuel says Brooklyn's got skills what will help us build."
Fragile as a turnip sprout, my scantling of hope stretches to the sun.
"Think I'll take you up on that rest," Uncle Jim tells Samuel, and we all follow him back inside the cabin.
"I'll keep watch," Brooklyn calls after us.
Samuel gives Uncle Jim a pillow stuffed with cattail fluff. Uncle Jim stretches out on the fur rug. Me and Willie crawl next to Mama and Thomas, both breathing heavy. I don't hardly have time to thank the good Lord before I'm in a sleep deeper in any slumber I can remember. When I wake up, Mama's sitting on the edge of the bed, just watching me. A soft gray darkness is settling in the room. "I didn't want you to be afraid if you woke up and we was gone."
Before we go outside, I nestle into Mama's arms. "Mama," I whisper, "I'm sorry. I put everyone in danger."
"We always been in danger."
"Not like this, Mama. What if a wildcat gets hungry? What if we'll..." Mama hushes me.
"We just got to teach him the ways of the woods. We just got to trust the good Lord."
I snuggle closer. I wish I could trust the Lord like Mama does. But for now, I trust the arms what's holding me.
"Come outside," Mama says. "Whatever tomorrow brings, tonight we is here. Tonight we is together."
Me and Mama hold hands and stand in the dark room. A single moonbeam is shining a path that we follow to the cabin door. Outside, folks we haven't met is huddled around a small fire. Uncle Jim's holding Thomas, and Willie's sitting by his feet. Mama and me stand beside him, my legs not believing they standing still while the moon's sending its purest light. 2 skinned rabbits is curled on a stick, roasting over the fire. A man what reminds me of Jordan is telling a story.
"Never would have run if Master didn't give me a gun and tell me to kill Henry for working too slow."
A toothless man with watery eyes and a gray and white beard interrupts.
"I was working hard as these old bones let me."
The man what reminds me of Jordan continues.
"Wanted me to shoot Henry right there in the daylight. Right there. With folks picking cotton all round him. Slow and steady, like I was obeying, I walked to the field, pointed the gun at Henry, and told him we both needed to run."
"Didn't think these old bones carry me," Henry says, "but Master's gun kept him from following us." He shakes his head. "Still pinch myself to make sure I really is free."
Maddie brings Mama and me gourds filled with warm, sweet tea made from juniper berries.
"I'll show you how to smoke a hive and gather honey," she promises us.
Maddie tells us how she toiled and sweated in a tobacco field till one afternoon she saw Mary, a woman expecting a baby, getting whipped for no reason at all. That night Samuel and me made a plan, and we took Mary with us. It wasn't easy, but we made it. Maddie smiles and nods at the smallest cabin what's in the center of the circle. Mary's rocking Isaac now. Nothing but joy that boy is. Strong, beautiful, born in freedom. Seems everybody's got a story to share. But even more than telling, they's listening and asking questions. Sadly, wondering about folks they left behind, or children that was torn away. The gourd is warm in my cupped hands,
and I think about Anna and her trembling hands. I never even said goodbye.
We stay another day with Samuel and Maddie to learn about surviving in the swamp. When's best to hide, where's best to hunt, what to do if a bear crosses our path. Then we move to a small clearing a morning's walk from the settlement. Brooklyn travels with us and helps dig a pit deep as it is wide. He helps us line it with thin, dry stones that won't pop and crack when we cook. He shows us how to build a cabin, what's lifted off the ground, so it stays dry when the rains come. Most mornings, Uncle Jim and Brooklyn hunt for birds and squirrels. Sometimes they take Willie along, and Brooklyn shows him the hollowed logs and burrows where rabbits like to hide. Thomas comes with Mama and me to gather berries. Mama carries Thomas, and I carry the basket. Every time Thomas drops a berry in my basket, he smiles, a quiet smile sweeter than any berry we gather. In the afternoons, Uncle Jim pounds the posts, while Brooklyn shows Mama and me how to weave together twigs and branches for the floor, walls, and roof. He shows us how to plait marsh grass and palmetto leaves to cover the cracks and keep away the wind and the rain. Nearby, the boys draw pictures or make mud cakes. At night, when we've taken our rest neath the stars, Brooklyn tells me more of his story. I stayed with my mama till I was 7 years old, he says. We lived in a cabin with my daddy and three little brothers. One night, my daddy escaped. He told Mama he'd find a job up north and save enough money to buy his freedom and our freedom, too. At night, Mama told us stories about how life would be when we lived up north. Brooklyn's voice is soft and wistful as a loon's. Only, my daddy never came back, and that master, the one who let Mama keep us and tell us stories at night, that master died, and his son brought all of us to the auction block. Brooklyn stops talking, and the night air weighs heavy with memories and imaginings. Finally, Brooklyn speaks. We were all sold to different masters, he says in a quivering voice. Sometimes at night, I still hear Mama crying. Was your new master cruel? I ask. Not in the beginning, Brooklyn says. I was a house slave, but when I ran away, he whipped me and made me take care of the dogs and sleep with them on the floor of the barn. Well, it's good you did take care of them, I say, remembering how the dogs let Brooklyn escape. You beat him at his own game. I think of Jordan and his scratched hands, and pray he found his way to freedom. Sometimes Samuel and one of the other men from the settlement come by to help lift logs or make cement from the mud and crushed oyster shells we gather from the bog. We share what food we have, and the men return to the settlement. Only Brooklyn stays with us. On days they don't hunt, him and Uncle Jim take the boys to fish in the stream. Sometimes Brooklyn stays behind to show Mama and me how to dry and pound cattail roots to make flour, or how to boil them like taters. But always at night, resting neath the stars, we whisper our stories. I tell him about Jordan and his baby girl he'll never see again. I tell him about Aunt Tempe and Aunt Sarah, Uncle Moses and Anna, about Master Allen and the missus, and her dishes what come all the way from England, and her bed what's got a roof over it. It's called a canopy bed, Brooklyn says. The master had one. Brooklyn knows lots of things I don't. He even taught himself to read by listening to his master's children reciting they letters and watching his master's children write their names. It's confusing at first, he says, but I can teach you. Now, when we finish building for the day, when the squirrel's been gutted and the fish smoked, when the dandelions is crushed for coffee or cut for soup, we clear a space to write letters in the dirt. If Willie's nearby, he listens and watches.
Brooklyn shows him the letter, what starts his name. So sometimes a row of upside-down mountains circle Willie's pictures. "Willie and wagon and wee," Brooklyn says, lifting Willie up and spinning him around. Willie laughs, but only softly, like a bell what's covered with feathers. I sometimes wonder if Brooklyn's thinking of his own little brothers and feeling the same heaving sorrow I felt when I moved to the big house. Finally, our cabin's finished. It's bigger than the cabin we left behind and lifted off the ground with vine and log stairs what sway when we climb 'em, and a roof what looks like a hat made of grass. A giant cypress stands guard out front. First time we climb in, Uncle Jim takes off his hat. We all hold hands, even Thomas and Willie, and Mama thanks the good Lord for keeping us safe. "Remember too," she says, "Sarah, old George Cooper, and all the folks we left behind." Brooklyn makes ready to go back to the settlement, but Mama asks him to stay. "The boys love you," she says. "We all do. And there's room here, plenty of room." "I haven't even learned all my letters yet," I say, and feel my face boiling. Uncle Jim puts his hand on Brooklyn's shoulder.
"I could use the help, son."
"Well, sir, if Samuel..."
"Already asked him," Uncle Jim says. "Only rule is, you got to call me Uncle Jim."
Tears fill Brooklyn's eyes, but his smile's wider than the moon.
"Well, sir, I mean, Uncle Jim, then I accept. Samuel and Maddie have been good to me."
He lifts Thomas into his arms.
"But I sure do miss having brothers."
That night, we all sleep under one roof, alert for the sounds of wolves and wildcats, but safe from the lash of the master's whip, and sheltered by walls made of palmetto leaves and love. A few weeks after we finished building our cabin, I'm lying in the dark, pondering and listening for wildcats, what might come devour us. I hear a soft rustling sound, and my heart starts pounding inside my head. I sit up. In the corner, Uncle Jim sleeps peacefully, his homemade spear on one side and Mama on the other. I peek through our grass wall. Brooklyn sits alone in the moonlight. Careful, I step over Thomas and slip outside. "What is you doing out here?" I ask, making room for myself on a moldering log. Above us, a full moon sits on the treetop like a giant white clover. The air's moist and still. "Can't sleep," Brooklyn says. "Lots of nights I lay awake wondering where they are. My mother, my brothers, my father. What happened to them?" "They somewhere," I say. "And I bet they's thinking of you every day. The things what we love we keep buried in our hearts." Brooklyn nods. "My brothers were little, so maybe they'll forget. But I won't, and I know my mama and my daddy won't forget either." Each of us sits quiet, pondering the folks what's buried in our hearts. "How long have you been living with Uncle Jim?" Brooklyn finally asks.
"About 5 years. Uncle Jim's the only father I ever knowed." I smile.
"He'll take good care of you, too." I think of Brooklyn teaching himself to read, escaping without a family to give him hope and shelter. "Course, it don't seem like you need much caring for."
"Everybody needs caring for," Brooklyn says.
"Especially white folks," I say. "They can't do nothing for themselves." Swift as a feathered arrow, I hear Aunt Tempe's voice crossing the swamp to scold me.
"Judging folks by the color of their skin is wrong, no matter who's doing the judging."
A snarling snort and screech, what must be fighting raccoons, interrupts my thoughts. But finally, Brooklyn starts talking again. "Sometimes it feels like my mama never existed, like I never existed. Always hiding, never leaving a trace of who I am or where I've been." He buries his bare feet in a mat of leaves. "It's like we don't exist,
I wish I could say something to make Brooklyn feel better. We exist same as the moon and the stars, I say. Brooklyn shakes his head and looks at me. His eyes glisten like the rainwater what collects in moldering leaves. It doesn't matter, Grace. No one will remember us. No one will even know we were here. Master Allen thought Aunt Sarah was useless, thought she wouldn't bring in Gully Fluff. But Master Allen was wrong. Aunt Sarah matters. She knows things. She knows how to keep boys quiet with dirt drawings and broken buttons. She knows to step away from a snake what's got poison in him. Aunt Tempy matters, too. I feel a stab of sorrow for how I misjudged her. I wonder how many folks she saved with her ham patties and Johnny cakes, with her secret messages scratched into rocks. Jordan and Uncle Moses, they matter, too. And no one works harder than poor Anna. The missus don't know it, but Anna matters. Even Thomas, what don't do nothing but give sweet smiles, he matters. Everyone's got a way of mattering. The only thing that don't matter is what color the good Lord paints us. Come with me, I say. I grab Brooklyn's hand, pull him to the cypress what guards our cabin, and kneel down. What are you doing? Brooklyn asks. Shh, I say. Help me clear away these leaves. We clear a space with a sharp rock. I dig a hole, small and deep as my fist. I pull Aunt Sarah's porcelain button from my pocket. Squeeze this, I whisper. Brooklyn takes the button. Now close your eyes and repeat what I say. I take a deep breath and start talking. My name is Brooklyn. I have a scar on my face from being struck by my master's cane. I walk with a limp from the whipping I got first time I ran away. Brooklyn squeezes the button and repeats my words. Master thought I was stupid, I continue, but I taught myself to read. I know all what plants is good and all what plants is poison. I know how to build a house. Again, Brooklyn repeats my words, not even changing them to make them sound more like him. Now it's your turn, he says. Tell your story. I take the button and squeeze it. My name is Grace. I know what's right and what's wrong. And I know keeping slaves is wrong. Binding folks in chains and selling them like there's nothing more than dried tobacco is wrong. Making them sleep on the floor, bringing them to the smokehouse and whipping them, ballyragging so they's too scared to breathe is wrong, wrong, wrong. My heart swells with readiness, and I squeeze my fingers tighter round the button. Stealing children, making them work till their bones is weak as jelly, binding their thoughts and words, forcing them to flee and kill snakes and eat lizards, is wrong. There's nobody ever can blame us for wanting to be free. The good Lord made this big, beautiful world for everybody. I wind a strand of hair around my finger and pluck it. Brooklyn watches me and does the same. We wrap the strands round the button, bury the button, and cover up the hole. Anyone ever finds this will know we existed, I say, will know we was here, will know we mattered, and didn't belong to nobody but ourselves. Though they stay skinny and light as swamp grass, and never wander beyond the trees what surround our cabin, Thomas and Willie grow stronger. They play hide and seek, wobble on stick stilts, and make silly faces. They laugh, but never very loud. They don't hardly even speak above a whisper. One morning, Thomas steps on a rat's nest and gets bit in three places. Three large red swellings appear on his foot. He whimpers like a kitten, but don't scream. How come he's not hollering? I ask Mama. Fear chokes the warble from some birds and never gives it back, Mama says, chewing the plant Maddie says is good for bites, patting it on Thomas's foot. when the Lord's done washing away old George Cooper's scars and wiping away the scar what slashes Brooklyn's brow, I hope he has time to give little boy voices back to Thomas and Willie. One morning, when the three-petaled flowers is bursting through the thicket and lacy-winged dragonflies is darting and dropping above rain puddles, Brooklyn and me venture out to gather mushrooms. I hear a rustle in the tree above us, and I jump. "Just a yellow warbler going home," Brooklyn laughs, and I laugh too. We don't ever let our guard down, but it's good to be out in the daytime, good to laugh and to learn things I never even wondered about. I know how to tell what plants is safe and what plants is poison. I know how to coil swamp grass into baskets, what can hold water, and how to burn pine branches to smoke away the honeybees and gather honey. I know how to peel and hone sticks to make them sharp enough to gut a fish, and how to make bowls by soaking and cutting dry gourds. I know all my letters, and even how to scratch out some words. My favorite word is freedom. I wish I could tell Aunt Sarah and Aunt Tempe. I finally understand. Freedom's not just a place you find on a map. Freedom's living with folks who love you and having the space to love yourself. Freedom's not being afraid to say your own thoughts and follow your own heart, just like the good Lord intended. This fine morning, under this blue sky, with a tiny yellow warbler singing fearless in the trees, I know I'm free. I'm free, and I'm never going to be not free again. The end. As usual, I want to read you the author's note because it's really fascinating. This is based on a real group of people, this story. The Great Dismal Swamp is a real place, a large marshy area spanning parts of Virginia and North Carolina, and I was fortunate to stumble into it while researching another idea for a story. What I discovered in this inhospitable wilderness surprised and inspired me. By the early 1860s, when my story takes place, Native Americans had been living in the Great Dismal Swamp for thousands of years. Some had naturally migrated there. Others sought to escape the tyranny and encroachment of European settlers. What I didn't know was that the swamp was also a refuge for enslaved people seeking freedom. These wilderness runaways were called Maroons. Those who settled at the edge of the swamp, close to civilization, were called Border Maroons, and they received food and supplies in secret from nearby farms and plantations. Those who settled farther away, as I imagined Grace and her family did, in a deeply secluded area of the interior swamp, were called Hinterland Maroons. Hinterland Maroons were self-sufficient, built their own shelters, foraged for their food, and lived lives independent of the society that had enslaved them. Because a Maroon's survival depended on secrecy, and because mud and wood homes disintegrate and decay, it is not easy to determine how many individuals forged their freedom in the Great Dismal Swamp. Life in the wilderness was difficult. Some Maroons were caught and killed before they reached safety. Those who were not faced hunger, ferocious animals, and the extreme perils of living in the wild. Still, an untold number of Maroons were able to survive in the swamplands. The choice to brave the wilderness rather than suffer the brutality and humiliation of bondage is a towering testimony to the spirit and conviction of an oppressed people who risked everything for the chance to be free. Also, in the acknowledgments, I want to read that too, because at least part of it. Although Unbound is a work of fiction, the imagined lives of Grace and her family are based on the experiences of real people. From 1936 to 1938,
narratives of the formerly enslaved were prepared by the Federal Writers Project. These first-person narratives painfully recount the cruelty inherent in any system that allows one individual power over another. The photographs and memories shared by the Federal Writers Project were an indispensable research tool as I pieced together the circumstances of Grace's life and tried to evoke authentic voices of the time. An NPR article, Fleeing to Dismal Swamp, Slaves and Outcasts Found Freedom, describing the work of Dr. Daniel O. Sayers, Department of Anthropology, American University, was my first introduction to the Maroons. The untold stories behind the tiny artifacts found by Sayers and his team first set me on my journey to the Great Dismal Swamp. I definitely recommend Googling the Great Dismal Swamp and reading more about it yourself, and reading more about the lives of those who escaped slavery to live in this very difficult region. And I hope you enjoyed Unbound. It's a beautiful book that needs to be heard. Thank you. I'll be back tomorrow with a new book.